Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. House Bill 176 would ban discrimination in housing and employment against gays and transgender people in Ohio, adding sexual orientation and gender identity to the Ohio state law that bars already discriminatory practices based on race, color, religion, age, sex, familiar status, marital status, family status, marital status, typo there, military status, national origin, ancestry, or disability. And the measure passed the House last September, but it's been stalled in the Senate. Joining me today in the studio is Michael Daniels. He's publisher of Outlook Columbus, and he's a regular guest on WOSU's Columbus on the Record. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann.
Also, Sue Dorfer of Equality Ohio. Sue, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We did invite lawmakers who oppose House Bill 176, and we were told that they're all tied up in committee hearings today and didn't have time to even get on the phone with us. And also organizations that out there in Ohio that oppose House Bill 176 were invited as well, and they declined the invitation. So, of course, we welcome all sides on our phones, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll start taking calls and emails after the first break. But for now, I want to know, why is House Bill 176 needed in Ohio? Who wants to go first? Michael?
I think from our perspective, it's pretty simple. You shouldn't be able to be fired or denied housing or kicked out of your current accommodations simply because you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered. And it's just that simple. That's it.
Some folks believe that House Bill 176 really monkeys with Ohio's existing civil rights laws. There's a couple different reasons, because it ignores past court rulings that define a class, for one thing, non-behavior related, history of discrimination resulting in economic deprivation, and a lack of political representation. The constituency that would benefit by House Bill 176 falls into none of those categories, according to critics. Susan?
Well, I think that according to critics, the constituency doesn't fall into those. But it really depends on the way that you look at being gay, lesbian, or transgendered. You know, many people believe that it is a behavior, and which is against most science, which says that it is not a behavior. It is something that is born and something that people really don't have a choice about. And so, I disagree with that assessment of it. And the other thing is that it really does go to the basis of civil rights law around employment, which is that people, the basis of that, of employment non-discrimination, is that we should be evaluated on our ability to do the job only. That's how we're supposed to be evaluated in employment. And if somebody is judged either fired, not hired, not given a promotion based on their sexual orientation, that is outside what our tradition is around employment law.
Some people would say, well, there's a moral issue here, that I morally oppose homosexuality. I'm an employer. I would not want somebody who engages in that behavior, assuming it's a choice, blah, 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 you know, to work for me. I don't want to support somebody like that with income.
And I can certainly understand when people say those kinds of things, but as an employer or as someone who's providing an opportunity for housing, as someone who owns an apartment complex, for instance, those aren't choices that you get, because you're not allowed to say, I don't like black people, so I'm not going to hire any of them, or I'm a Christian, so I'm not going to rent to Jews. You don't get that option in public in accommodations, housing, and employment for the classes that are currently listed as being protected. And so I really think that the whole sort of morality argument really kind of falls apart. I think it's something of a smokescreen that people are hiding behind. The truth of the matter is that gay, lesbian, and transgendered individuals are still the only group of folks in America that it's legal to openly discriminate against us, or to openly say that you hate us and therefore you're not going to hire us, let us rent your apartment, et cetera. But you don't really get that option. It's if you're hiring someone, you're doing it based on how well they can do their job. If you're providing accommodations, pretty much, you know, are they going to keep the place clean and pay their rent on time? Beyond that, I don't think you really should be able to dictate what folks do, who they are, how they worship, who they love.
I agree. And also, there is an exemption for religious organizations. So employers, businesses and organizations, usually the nonprofits, that are religious-based, they are exempt from this law. They would be exempt from the bill.
And I think that there have been those kinds of exemptions have been placed for a long time. Obviously, you know, Christian organizations have been able to say we are only going to employ people of who are of the same faith. And those exemptions for those kinds of nonprofits, particularly church or faith-based organizations, have always been in place.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820, and we're talking about House Bill 176. If it passed, it would ban discrimination in housing and employment against gays and transgender people in Ohio. It would add sexual orientation and gender identity to the Ohio state law that already bars discriminatory practices based on race, color, religion, age, sex, family status, marital status, military status, national origin, ancestry, or disability. You know, some of those in there already seem like choices to me.
Yes.
Family status, marital status, ultimately it's
military
a choice.
Military status
and that kind of thing. So,
right. And I was thinking when Michael was talking about landlords, for instance, it's long been against the law to discriminate based on family status. So if a woman has children but she's unmarried, you can't discriminate against her. And you could use the moral argument on issues like that, but that is already included in the classes that can't be discriminated against. So the choice argument falls apart and the moral argument falls apart when you look at the other kinds of situations that are already protected under the existing law.
Now, I know that you guys aren't necessarily equipped to argue the law per se as it exists, but I'm kind of curious about the age issue as well. If I'm an apartment owner and I want to rent my apartment out and a 17-year-old comes in who's, you know, or an 18-year-old, and I think they're too young to be, renting my apartment. I don't want somebody that young in there. They don't seem very responsible, that kind of a thing. However, whatever kind of attributes or negatives I attribute, you know, to that age level, can I say no?
Well, as long as they are an adult. So they have to be an adult, and you could do a background check. You could do a credit check, which would be one way of looking at how responsible is someone at 18 and do they have a job and, you know, full-time income, that kind of thing.
So that's that justifiable.
Yeah, but yes, according to the law, if they were an adult, you would have to rent the apartment to them if they were equal to the other candidates.
But I think one of the things, Ann, that you bring up in that case is if you're a landlord and you're a bit squeamish about renting to somebody who's 18, it probably isn't because they're 18. It's probably because of particular attributes that you associate with an 18-year-old. Perhaps they don't have a job. Perhaps they aren't very responsible. Perhaps they're very loud and obnoxious and are going to throw parties at 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, you can choose to not rent to someone because they don't have an employment history or a credit history that fits with what you're looking for. You certainly can take eviction action if they are constantly blaring their radio at 2 o'clock in the morning and throwing their garbage out the window. So you can discriminate, if you will. You can pick and choose among folks based on the behaviors of what you're looking for in a tenant or what you're looking for in an employee. We're not saying that a gay person who comes to work late, is totally slovenly, doesn't perform on the job, et cetera, shouldn't be let go. They should be let go because they're a horrible employee. They shouldn't be let go because they're gay. I think, and that's what we're looking for in terms of this bill.
Last year, State Representative Bill Batchelder, who opposes House Bill 176, said that we don't even know the dimensions of the problem. That, in other words, some folks say that this is a solution looking for a problem.
Well, part of the reason that we don't have statistics on how many times this happens is because it's not protected. And so we don't have accurate information about how many times is someone discriminated against in employment, harassed on the job, forced out of the job through harassment. But on the other hand, the Civil Rights Commission does have records of the number of complaints that have come in, and gay and lesbian organizations across Ohio have information about how many times they hear stories. And we have, you know, We have people who can tell you the things that have happened on the job. I think the argument that discrimination is not happening in employment, therefore we don't need this bill, is really sort of ironic, because if discrimination isn't happening in employment, then why not have the bill? Because then nothing will change anyway. So why don't we just put it on to protect those people just in case it happens? But the truth is, we know that this kind of discrimination happens every day in Ohio. And it's not just, it's not as clear as you're gay, you're fired, or you're gay, I'm not going to hire you. Sometimes it is that clear. But oftentimes it's it's harassment on the job. It's the way that people are treated. It's lack of promotion on the job. It's people show up to look at an apartment and suddenly the apartment's been rented when they're two men together, or when somebody looks like they may be transgendered. And I think the other thing people need to remember is this isn't about the reality of being gay, lesbian, or transgender. It's about the perception, right? So any straight person could go to and apply for a job, and if the boss thinks that they might be gay or lesbian, they cannot hire them based on that. Same thing with renting an apartment or public accommodations. So, you know, this is one of those things where it's really based on perception. And so we're all at risk. Anybody who could be perceived as being gay, lesbian, or transgender is at risk for this kind of discrimination.
And I don't think you have to look any further than the front pages of any of the major newspapers in America right now, because one of the big discussions going on is with President Obama's nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court, Solicitor General Elena Kagan. She's unmarried. She has a short haircut. She plays softball. So the questions immediately are, is she a lesbian? Should lesbian be on the court, et cetera?
Should we ask her if she's a lesbian? Does that have anything to do with the job?
Right, exactly. Well, you know, first of all, I don't think any of us in the gay community know whether she's a lesbian or not. But that's what Sue's talking about in terms of that perception. Someone, you know, shows up, they're in their 40s or 50s, they've never been married, they have a short haircut, they're on a softball team, and they've made a statement that says, don't ask, don't tell, is bad policy. Is she going to be discriminated against? Is she going to be treated differently in this confirmation process because people even think that she might be lesbian? Absolutely, she is.
We're going to have to take a short break, and then we will return. My guests are Michael Daniels of Outlook Magazine. He's also a regular guest on WOSU's Columbus on the Record. And Sue Dorfer, she's the executive director of Equality Ohio. We'll be right back to talk about House Bill 176 on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
You can hear more from WOSU anytime at our website, wosu.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archived shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at wosu.org/allsides. And thanks for joining us this morning. 62 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:19. Cloudy skies today. There is a slight chance of rain throughout the day and a high of 65. Clouds tonight with a good chance of rain overnight and a low of 53. Cloudy for Wednesday. Still a slight chance of rain, but very slight, and a high of 68. And looking ahead to Thursday, sunshine and a high of 76 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. House Bill 176, it passed the House way back in September, and back then Senate leadership said, yeah, sure, we'll consider it, let it stand on its own two legs, and we'll do it. But the bill apparently is still at rest in the Rules Committee in Senate, which means it hasn't been assigned to a committee, and it hasn't had any hearings or anything like that. So my guests, Michael Daniels and Sue Dorfer, haven't had a chance to even speak, but do you go to Senate members? Have you talked to any of them, Sue, about this?
Yes, we have talked to several of the Senate members, and tomorrow, actually, we have our lobby day for equality, and there will be 300 people at the State House tomorrow talking to all different representatives about this issue and other issues, but this one is the primary one. So far, we have not gotten confirmation that Senator Harris will be moving the bill to a to hearings.
He's, of course, in charge of the Rules Committee as Senate President.
Right, exactly. And so we haven't heard confirmation that he will or he will not. So we're still sort of waiting to find out what he's going to do with this.
I know that we have at least one ally on the Republican side, and Senator Goodman would like to move the bill. I know that the Senate Minority Leader Cafaro, there was just a letter submitted to President Harris signed by all 12 of the Senate Democrats asking that the bill be assigned to committee. Let's do proponent and opponent testimony, and let's vote it up or down. Let's see where it goes. It's funny because if you thought that Harris wanted to just kill this, that he'd just call the vote and vote the bill down. Because, I mean, if it's going to be that straight along party lines, the Democrats don't have a chance. It's kind of interesting. We really do want to get this called forward and so forth. I think that there may actually be some Republican allies in the Senate that we're going to have to continue to talk to because it's an election year for some of those. And, you know, for some of those folks are running for other offices, and it might be a poison pill that maybe they don't want this to come up. Perhaps it may even be one of those things that maybe the Republican leadership doesn't want this to come up. Because there may actually be more people who'd vote for it than leadership is willing to admit at this point, particularly in this kind of an election year where things headed toward the fall are going to become more and more and more partisan.
How do you begin to measure the influence that the LGBT community has now on legislature? Because the point is, you're making, Michael, is if it came up for a vote, there might have been a day when if you voted for it, you'd be in danger,
mm-hmm.
But the day has come when if you vote against it, that could also hurt you.
Absolutely.
Just depends on the district.
Right, right. Well, and we saw in the House that the several Republicans who voted for the bill in the House, their opponents in the primaries did attack them on this issue in particular, but it didn't work. And so I think we're seeing that voters are much more progressive and voters are more going down the middle line. And so both parties need to follow that. And you're absolutely right. It isn't like it was where you could count on a Republican to vote against anything that was pro-gay. That's not the reality.
And I think we may have a better chance of moving it now that the primary
right.
is over. Because I look at, for instance, the race for Ohio Secretary of State, where Senator Stivers has actually been a fairly good ally of the GLBT community in various ways. Former Stivers.
Yeah, yeah.
There are just – it's going to be interesting to me – I didn't mean Stivers. I'm sorry. I mean Husted.
Okay.
Senator Husted, I'm sorry, have been allies of the community in many ways. But they had Tea Party opponents running against them. So, again, if we'd called this bill – then somebody like Senator Husted would be sort of in a position of, do I vote my conscience and vote for it and get killed by the extreme right wing of my own party, or do I vote against it, vote against what I really believe in, and really sort of hurt my chances with anyone who's middle of the road progressive in the fall? Well, now the primary is over, and so if we can call that, it does give Senator Husted the ability to do the right thing and vote yes for 176, realizing that he's running against Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy. And on this issue, then you can call it a wash. They would both be in favor of this ENDA.
Until the next primary. If you were to run. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Matt, you're on the air. You want to make a point about people who discriminate against straights. You're on the air.
Well, I
okay.
just think that the victimology slant on this seems to be going all one way. In current law, you know, a gay operator of a management company could discriminate against me because I'm straight.
That's absolutely correct.
Not gay enough. And since records aren't being kept, if you were going to make a generalization about the demographics, mm-hmm. gays have fewer kids. They advance because they spend more time at work. Who's gonna be a boss?
And
this bill would protect you as well. This bill protects in employment, housing, and public accommodations based on sexual orientation. So it protects heterosexuals homosexuals, bisexuals, and transgendered people. So this bill would protect you as well. It's a good point.
Yeah. No, and I absolutely,
it's a great idea.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think one of the things that would move this bill directly to your point, one of the things that would move this bill at 100 times its current speed is if every gay or lesbian working at a company were to walk in tomorrow morning and fire all the straight people who work for them and just say, I'm sorry, you're straight. You can't work here anymore. Look across Columbus and look at the total number of people who would be unemployed, and this bill would get a hearing.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for your call.
You.
Interesting. Different point of view and edifying, no less. The argument persists that homosexuality is a chosen behavior. That's not going to go away anytime soon. How do you that's a disagreement that's out there and will be for a long time until somebody can categorically prove otherwise. That's an argument a lot of people fall back on. How do you address that argument?
Well, I think that I look to the science that shows that that's probably not the case. But then I think the counter argument is, even if it is, let's assume that it's a choice. So is family status. So is military status. To some extent, so is religion. You may be born into a Catholic family, but at some point you choose to be confirmed. People change religions all the time. So if you were born Baptist, but you convert to Judaism when you're 30, should you now be able to be discriminated against because you've chosen to be a Jew?
Mm-hmm.
So the choice argument goes away as well.
In testimony, a few conservative and religious groups have said that the bill was unneeded, as we talked about before, and would create chaos for small businesses forced to comply.
Well, first of all, there is an exemption for small businesses as well. You have the bill there, Michael. I think it's this applies to businesses with over 50 employees.
I think that's right.
So small businesses with less than 49 or less employees are exempt.
So they could continue to discriminate if
yes,
they wanted
yes.
to.
Yes, religious groups and small businesses could continue to discriminate. And the argument that this puts a burden on businesses. You go back to the laws that already exist and how much of it has been a burden. I mean, this was an argument used with all different kinds of civil rights as each class got added to the protection that it was going to be a burden. Well, if there is no discrimination out there, then it won't be a burden because nobody will get fired. No one will not get hired and there won't be any lawsuits. So, the two arguments, this doesn't exist and it's going to be a burden, they really cancel each other out.
And I think that one of the largest champions for business that by its very design keeps an eye out for things that are bad for business, the Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. The Columbus Chamber of Commerce has endorsed HB 176. But if you it's just good business policy. If you were trying to attract talented people to work in your city, let's say, it makes sense to have a non-discrimination policy in employment and in housing, because even if you're recruited by someone like a limited or someone like that, you still have to worry about whether your partner can become employed. You still have to worry about whether or not you're going to be able to rent that apartment. So it's just good for business to do the right thing and hire people based on their skill sets.
What about the National Federation for Independent Businesses? How do they support the bill? Do you know, NFIB?
I honestly don't know where they are.
I don't think they've weighed in.
Okay. All right. That tends to be smaller companies and that kind of a thing. Now, larger companies, many larger companies, 433 of the Fortune 500 already have these policies in place.
Exactly.
Against discrimination.
Mm-hmm. Right. The private sector is often
state government, city government.
Right. The private sector has often led the way for the public sector. There are cities in Ohio that do also have bills similar to this. But, the people who are really the most vulnerable are not the people living in the short north of Columbus or in Cleveland Heights in Cleveland. It's the people in the rural areas and the people in towns and cities where they don't have these kinds of protections. And so this would make it protection for everybody who lives in Ohio, and it wouldn't make any difference if you live in one city and work in a suburb, and it would just provide protections across the state.
These kind of protections exist in the Ohio General Assembly as well, don't they?
some facsimile of them?
For state employees.
For state employees.
Yes.
By executive order.
Okay.
That was an executive order that was actually put in place by Governor Celeste and kept in place by Governor Voinovich, then allowed to expire under Governor Taft, and was reinstated by Governor Strickland.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. I just want to remind listeners that we did invite opponents of House Bill 176 to the show. Went to several sources and was including lawmakers who opposed the bill. And the lawmakers said they didn't have time. They're busy with committee hearings this week, and it is a busy time for them. That's true. And folks from other organizations declined the invitation. So I'm sorry about that. But right now we do have Sam on the line. You say you oppose the legislation, and you cite the idea of the don't ask, don't tell. Hi, Sam. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, no, I didn't say I oppose the legislation, but my question is more of a legal issue, I guess. If the federal government has a law of don't ask, don't tell, why can't a private business have the same policy and not be violating any law? I'm not saying, you know, it is right or wrong. I'm saying is, you know, being a private business, shouldn't the individual owner be able to make his or her own rules as long as they're not discriminating against anybody?
You mean if the armed services can do it,
yeah,
why not?
Yeah, private business do it.
That's a really good question, and that's a really good question for our federal government. But right now, private businesses are not allowed to discriminate and are not allowed to make those kinds of choices based on the protected classes that are already are in the law. And so, you know, like Michael was saying earlier, private business owners cannot discriminate against somebody because of their race, religion, marital status, all of those other things. So they don't have those kinds of choices, private business owners. And so what we're looking to do is for the state of Ohio is to add sexual orientation and gender identity to those protected classes. Now, what the federal government is doing and what the military are doing, Michael and I don't have a lot of influence over that, or we'd be working on those issues as well. But as you probably know, Don't Ask, Don't Tell is being reviewed, and there is a federal bill right now called ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which is being looked at for the entire country, which would only include employment discrimination, but would cover would be a federal law.
Okay, Sam?
But I understand that, but my understanding is the Don't Ask, Don't Tell being reviewed not because it is an illegal or unconstitutional, but because of societal policies that are changing. The mood of the people are changing, like, let's say, from 20, 30 years ago. But private, you know, and the federal government does have anti-discriminatory law. I mean, you cannot discriminate if you're a federal employer against the protected classes or against somebody who's single versus married or with others.
You are, Sam, you're exactly correct in what you're saying. And what we're trying to do, of course, then is add sexual orientation and gender identity to those protected classes, because it is still perfectly legal to say, you're gay, please leave my place of business. You can't work here anymore. You're gay. You cannot rent this apartment, et cetera. Not just in terms of denying someone the ability to rent an apartment, but landlords can actually, if they find out while you're renting that you are gay, they can evict you because they can just say, I don't want to rent to gay people.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for your answers.
Thanks, Sam, for your call. 614-292-8513 if you'd like to give us a call, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about House Bill 176. It passed the House last September. It has been at rest in the Senate in Rules Committee without hearings since then. And folks with me today, Michael Daniels of Outlook Magazine and also Sue Dorfer of Equality Ohio are here to talk about that. We did invite people who oppose House Bill 176 to the show, and they declined our invitation. How does Ohio compare to other states in this regard?
Ohio is tied for dead last in the country with four other states. So we are tied for dead last for LGBT rights. And that is because we have no protections whatsoever in the state of Ohio. There's absolutely nothing. And we have two laws that are actually that legally discriminate against us. The first was the Defense of Marriage Act, which was passed by the legislation, and then the constitutional amendment banning marriage between same-sex couples, which happened in 2004. So we're dead last in the country.
Now, people say, well, how can we be? Because so many people, you know, Columbus is considered a Mecca, you know, for gay people. What's the problem here? If people keep coming here, then what's so bad about it?
Columbus is an island. Columbus is this inside 270 and outside 270 are somewhat totally different worlds. And I think that many of us who live here in the capital city get a little bit spoiled. I talk to folks even inside the gay and lesbian community who don't recognize that we don't have these protections because we do at the city level. And the county offers domestic partnership benefits and the city's about to offer domestic partnership benefits. And we have, you know, we live in the 15th largest city in America, which is probably about the fifth largest gay city in America. I revel in the fact that we have, you know, the media company here, that Outlook, that we can do the things that we do. And so inside Columbus, sometimes I think our perspective is colored a lot differently. When we talk to our gay and lesbian friends in, you know, in Zanesville or further out, things are very, very different. It's also very competitive here in the capital city, and you have companies that have led the way, from Cardinal Health to Limited to the Ohio State University and others, who have had these kinds of policies in place. And so if people are coming to the city and those companies have these kinds of things, you can't discriminate and be competitive. But again, when you move outside the Beltway, and nobody has these in place, then you can feel free to deny people employment based on orientation all day long. It has to do with I think, how insular we in Columbus are, and how both blessed and spoiled, I think, to some extent, the gay community here in Columbus has become.
And as I travel around the state meeting people, both gay, lesbian, and transgender people, but also family members, I hear dozens and dozens of stories, especially from parents of gay and lesbian, their kids who are now adults, and their kids have moved out of Ohio because they couldn't get the kinds of chances that they needed and wanted in Ohio, and, you know, lived in this environment that was really scary, and that they didn't know what was going to be happening from day to day. And the constitutional amendment in 2004, when that was passed by the voters, mm-hmm. it changed the feel of the LGBT community across Ohio, because what it said was, my neighbors voted that I am a second-class citizen, that I'm not as good as they are. And that was a really scary moment across the board. And so people left Ohio in droves at that point. And I think Michael's right that Columbus and pockets in Cleveland, and there are other areas across the state where there are pockets of safety and pockets of LGBT people living together and progressive businesses. But for the majority of the state, that's not the reality.
I wanted to ask one quick question before we take a break. I wanted to figure this out before. Is it a criminal or a civil offense, the way this law is set up? It would be civil, wouldn't
it?
It's civil. Because I was reading criticisms of it that said it would make it a crime, or you'd be a criminal if you discriminated.
No, it's simply civil remedies. There might be, one might be able to collect damages or sue to get one's job back or that sort of thing. But no, the only thing criminal that would be discussed in any way, shape, or form regarding the GLBT community is if we were to append sexual orientation and gender identity to the hate crimes bill, but still, you know,
that's totally
different than what we're doing here. This is strictly civil litigation.
Okay, we have to take a short break. When we return, glad to take your calls, emails, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. The next Fresh Air, New York Times reporter Scott Shane tells the story of the American-born Muslim cleric known to have inspired the Times Square bomber and the army psychiatrist who killed 13 people at Fort Hood. Once seen as a leader of moderate Islam, he's now a jihadist hiding in Yemen, regarded as so dangerous he's targeted for killing by the CIA. Join us.
and Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thank you to everyone who pledged their support during WOSU's recent spring membership drive. Your pledge helped make the drive a great success. Your contributions keep NPR News, programming like All Sides with Ann Fisher, and classical music on the radio for all of Central Ohio. We rely on you to keep this station strong and to fulfill your pledge. If you missed the chance to give, you can still do so at WOSU.org. And thank you again for your generous support of WOSU 820 NPR News. WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Club presents their Wednesday forum tomorrow at noon. Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray discusses consumer advocacy and taking on Wall Street. Visit ColumbusMetroClub.org for tickets and more information. 62 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies today and a slight chance of rain, a high of 65. Clouds tonight with a good chance of rain tonight and a low of 53. Clouds for Wednesday, a slight chance of rain, a high of 68. And looking ahead to Thursday, sunshine and a high of 76. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820, NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about House Bill 176. It would ban discrimination in housing and employment against the LGBT community in Ohio, adding sexual orientation and gender identity to the Ohio state law that bars discriminatory practices based on race, color, religion, age, sex, family status, marital status, military status, national origin, ancestry, or disability. The list is getting long. If you would like to join us, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Have a question for Michael Daniels of Outlook Magazine or Sue Dorfer of Equality Ohio? Join us. I wanted to bring up the issue of how the bill would authorize the Ohio Civil Rights Commission to work with the Department of Education to ensure that all public school students in Ohio are taught what? What's the education component in the legislation? Is there one?
No.
Nothing.
There's
no.
Nothing.
Okay.
There's
because
no
I kept
education
reading
component at all.
Okay.
That's part of the what opponents are talking about is that somehow this bill is going to make it necessary to teach our children about gay people when they're in kindergarten or first grade, and there is nothing in this bill whatsoever that addresses
at all. Now I suppose when you're a kid in whenever you learn about state discrimination laws and how the state handles discrimination, mm-hmm. that term will pop up if the law is passed. But there's no curriculum.
No.
Or discussion of curriculum.
There's absolutely nothing to do with schools. There's no curriculum. There's nothing to do with education. Nothing at all.
Because I read that over and over and over again from the critics.
Right.
So that's just a confusion.
Totally misinformation.
Okay. Let's take a call right now, 614-292-8513, if you would like to join the conversation. And Chris is calling. He is a straight business owner who favors the legislation. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, as you said, I'm an old straight white guy who owns a very small local business. At various times in the past, we've had more gay employees than straight employees. I think this question about small business being excluded is an unfortunate concern. From my standpoint, small businesses, even more than large businesses, cannot afford to hire people on the basis of any other consideration than who's best qualified. And I can't imagine why very small business people would not want to see this as an opportunity as opposed to a problem. And it goes beyond just hiring. We can use things like the lavender listings that Stonewall puts out to get access to high-quality subcontractors or vendors from the GLBT community. And so I really see the question about very small businesses being excluded as an unfortunate concern.
All righty. Thanks, Chris, for your call. You know, another criticism that I heard was that if this passes, then businesses will be forced to hire gays, lesbians,
transgender.
Just like they're forced to hire men and women.
Right.
And white people and black people.
And this is, there's no affirmative action attached to this or anything like that. So it's not like, you know, 10% of your employees have to identify as GLBT. It's about hiring the best candidate for the job, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity.
And I think, you know, trying to be a little tongue in cheek there, but really it is that there is no quota component to it. You can't walk into a business and say, hi, I'm gay. You have to give me a job because HB 176 passed. You can't walk in and say, hi, I'm a 42-year-old straight white woman, and you have to give me a job because you can't discriminate against me based on my age or my gender. No, you don't have to give anybody a job. You just can't refuse to give someone a job if they're qualified and they happen to be gay.
And many other things.
Right.
Let's take another call. So far, they're all in favor. If you're opposed to the legislation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Maybe you feel more comfortable using Facebook. You can do that, too, because my associate producer, Amy Jurovich, is scanning for comments even as we speak. Karen is in favor of the legislation. Karen, but you have a concern. Hi, Karen.
I'm in favor of the new bill being passed, and I really do hope that it will be. But I'm kind of concerned about enforcement because discrimination on the basis of sex and age, I mean, women are still subject to that in a lot of professional jobs. There are more women that are able to move up, but there are still a lot that can't. And my question is, like, one is, how can we better enforce these things? It's just so nebulous. People do discriminate in a very subtle way. And I was always discouraged during the Bush administration to contact the EEOC in Cleveland if there was a problem, because everyone told me that they were really slowing down on purpose. They had a backlog of 200,000 complaints that they hadn't looked at, and hardly any were going through. And I just wondered if anyone knows, has that changed, and how we might better enforce this.
Okay.
Karen, I agree with you. Enforcement of discrimination statute is always difficult because you have to prove that you've been discriminated against and why. Part of what this does, it would empower the Ohio Civil Rights Commission to be able to take a look at these kinds of complaints the same way that they take a look at complaints based on age or gender or race. It is certainly going to stop immediately the most blatant cases of this. The ones that are more subtle, and agreed, as an employer, interviewing people, you can generally, if you want to find a reason to not hire somebody, you can generally find a reason to not hire somebody.
Sure.
But what this does is it takes the blatant application of that off the table and simply says you can no longer look at somebody and say, I'm not going to hire you because you're effeminate, or I'm not going to rent to you because you are two women living together.
And Karen, the other thing is, I totally agree with you, and you know, all of these years later, although women are a protected class, we're still seeing that we're not paid equally to men, and we're still seeing discrimination. But we also have seen the whole attitude about women in the workplace shifting over the years. And that's the other thing that I think would happen is, once this bill is in place and those most blatant discriminatory practices stop, then slowly open gay, lesbian, and transgender people in the workplace becomes part of the norm. And
yeah,
we'll see
it'll
that
be
whole...
part of a new culture. Even.
Right, exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Thanks, Karen, for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. We're going to take a call now from Amy. Amy did lose her job. Amy, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, actually, I didn't lose my, my job, but as an employee of a small business, at the time, and this was in 1991, I was being discriminated as a lesbian. And it's a current family-run, owned business in town. And when I finally threatened that I had had enough, the owner, you know, this is the bittersweet part, is that the owner did fire the senior family member.
And that was to do the discriminating?
That was discriminating against me with a sub, you know, somebody else in the business. And so that, but that was in 91. I wasn't protected then. I called my attorney. I called Stonewall. You know, I was looking for some kind of help. And I wasn't covered then or protected then. And I don't feel like I'm covered, you know, protected now.
Amy, let me ask you, how did you know that it was because you're a lesbian and not because they don't like your personality? Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking for an example, a specific example of what was it?
The last thing she said was, I'm going to get you, you lesbian dyke.
Okay, there
clear.
You go.
Right. That was pretty clear.
You know,
yeah. I've been discriminated against because I'm Jewish, a woman, a vegetarian, and a lesbian, okay? But never in the workplace because I was a lesbian until then.
Okay.
And the owners knew I was a lesbian when they hired me.
Mm-hmm.
And it had nothing to do with my job.
So it was more about harassment and making it an untenable situation for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And I think you vegetarian people are weird, just so you know.
Well, try to be a mixed bag like me.
Life ain't
easy.
Thanks, Amy, for your
Thank
call.
You. Thanks,
Take
Amy.
614-292-8513. We have about 9 minutes left. Let's see. Eric is a med student, and you favor the legislation. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet.
Yeah, I just wanted to call to bring up a point about how not having the bill can actually hurt Ohio's taxpayers. In my circumstance, being a fourth-year medical student in Ohio State, my medical education is actually subsidized by the education being an in-state resident. It's about I think it's around $15,000 a year that my tuition is reduced, and certainly I think that's at least in part to encourage me to stay and practice within the state. But you know, by not having so that's you know it's an incentive for me to stay, but we also as a state have disincentives for me to stay, you know, through not having bills like Equal Housing Employment Act. So,
are you going to leave?
I'm just getting married this coming June, and my fiance and I are going to Portland, Oregon, actually. But
I think you bring up a really important point is as we see the brain drain of Ohio, you know, studies have shown and there's been some really amazing work around having progressive laws and having progressive communities that include LGBT are inviting not just to the gay and lesbian community, but to straight people who look for signs of a progressive state and a progressive communities, and one of those is a visible, protected LGBT community. And so, you know, we're seeing, I think you're a really good example of really good talent that we lose because we don't have those kinds of policies in place.
Eric, thanks for your call.
Yep, thank you.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org.
And I think, Ann, I think Eric brings up a really important point, and that Sue brings up here. There's somebody who is very talented, obviously straight, who's leaving Ohio because he perceives Ohio as being too backward for him. You know, these are people who want to raise their families in progressive, inclusive communities, and people think, wow, really, do straight people actually leave because we don't have this kind of thing? But if I knew that a business discriminated against people based on their race, like, so this restaurant,
and that was okay.
If that was okay and there was a restaurant that refused to serve African Americans, I wouldn't eat there either. It's just a matter of principle. And so I think what we are seeing is that the straight ally community is a huge part of this discussion.
And it's also about quality of life and how people want to raise their children as well. You know, lots of couples that I know, both gay, but also lots of straight couples who have children, want them raised in an environment where this kind of discrimination is not taught to them, is not so blatant and obvious. They want them raised in a world and in an environment where all people are treated equally. And so they leave Ohio.
And you have to wonder if we have a family and if we raise our kids here and if one of our kids is gay.
Right.
Do we want to have to go through that? Do we want for our own child to be able to legally be discriminated against?
It always makes you think of sort of that universal design parallel. Why do we need, door handles that work for people who have disabilities? And it's because you never know if you're going to cross the street and get hit by a truck and eat it yourself, I guess is what you're trying, the point you're trying to make.
Right.
We have Tom. He's waiting for to talk to us. Tom is gay. He has a personal experience. Tom, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, just a couple of points. First of all, I honor you all for the subject and the comments that you're making. I happen to be an older gay man. I'm in a service, creative services industry, and I've been really successful. And I think if I hadn't been so important to potential clients, I mean, I found out after the fact that they pretended to not care about my sexuality because they needed my services so much. And, you know, then later, as they found out there was no reason to have, I don't know, all the boogies that were in their head, some of the nicer ones confessed to me that they really had a problem with it and realized how pointless that was. And I guess the thought I would like to leave everybody with is, you know, what in the world is wrong with the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So I'm supporting this. I think the last thing you ought to encourage people to do, or the next thing you ought to encourage people to do, if you've managed to be successful because of your talents, why don't you call a legislator and encourage them to support this bill for the same reasons. Take care.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for your call. The other thing you could do, besides call your legislators, is you could come tomorrow to our Lobby Day for Equality, which would put you – we have appointments with all of the senators and the House reps with groups of people who are going to go. And it's very simple. It's really about telling your story, like Tom just told. It's about sitting down one individual to another and saying, here's my experience. Here's why I support this bill. Here's why I support equality for all people in Ohio.
Tell us, is there a website we can go to learn more about that?
Yep, it's equalityohio.org.
Okay, and we'll post that to our website, wosu.org/allsides. What exactly happens? You just show up at the State House and...
Well, what we do is we spend months preparing, and like I said, we have appointments. And so we have groups of people, and our staff person has gone around the state training people on how to lobby. And so they go and they meet with their representative from their area and just talk, like I said, tell their stories, talk about their lives, how the lack of protections has affected them, and then ask for support for this bill and for other issues as well. But this is really our big one. You know, and it gives elected officials a chance to meet with real people, hear real stories, and understand that this is that we are a part of their constituency. Lobby Day is not just gay, lesbian, and transgendered people, but also straight allies and parents of gay and lesbian people who will meet with their elected officials and tell their stories and ask for them to support equality.
And I think it will go a long way toward answering the somewhat rhetorical question that Senator Harris asks: is this a solution in search of a problem? I think when people show up and every single member of the Ohio House and Senate has someone who tells them this is an issue, it then lets everybody know that, no, this is a problem that needs a solution. This is not the other way around.
Okay, if you want to learn more about Lobby Day tomorrow, go to wosu.org/allsides, and we'll have a link to equalityohio.org for you. I want to say thanks to my guest today, Michael Daniels of Outlook Magazine. Thanks for being with us, Michael.
And thanks for having me.
And also Sue Dorfer of Equality Ohio. Thanks for being in the studio with us today, Sue.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And sorry that we couldn't get opponents of House Bill 176. It wasn't for a lack of trying, and we'll try again. Thanks for joining us today on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.